Thank you for listening to Black Women Are Scary, the podcast that celebrates people of color writing horror. The theme this season is land and place, be they magical or macabre. We'll be featuring a few stories from the anthology Multi-Species Cities, Solarpunk Urban Futures. This month, our story episode will be told in two parts. So let's lean in and listen to part one of Wania by Amin Chehelnabi.
Time was of the essence, and Tara hadn't much of it left. The government would be able to track them if they were out for too long, with their freestanding colossal cities on constant outlook, be it visual or digital. She watched the rugged plain ahead with her cracked binoculars and saw blackened trees and stumps and so much fire in the distance. Their fierce heat and destruction sought to undermine all of her work in the Northern Kimberley. She'd invested years of preparation into these sojourns during the dry seasons, of traversing waterless pools and gorges, of constant research and hiding, of tears and physical strain to get to this point aboard Wania. A sudden jolt disrupted her study of the land. She checked the readings on her console. A limestone boulder the size of a small hill had been ridden over, creating a cloud of toxic white dust. The caterpillar track was still intact, though. The drive sprockets and the drive train hadn't been damaged, and the jolt brought her thoughts back to the present. This grim present. And all she felt was anxiety and worry for herself and for what was out there, what needed to be found and protected at all costs. It was worth more than anything, even more than her crew. Thank God. Wania has lasted this long. There aren't many of these machines left. How many? 3? Maybe 4? In the whole country? A complex mix of emotions stirred through her as she watched the battery power of the giant machine decline. It read 32%, and only one of the large solar panels still worked. The other 4 were damaged and intermittent at best. She lifted a shaking hand and studied the land again, saw another boulder ahead. This one was particularly large. Helmsman, she said into her radio, her voice shaking. Starboard, 15 degrees. Limestone up ahead.
Yep,
came the crackled response, and then...
Can you see that, Tara? I can see wallabies.
Wallabies?
Yes.
How can you see them?
I have binoculars, too. You're not the only one looking, you know.
Of course. That was Bob, or Kobar, which he preferred. He was an Aboriginal teenager of the Woorowra tribe, one of several others in the Kimberley region. He was 16 years old and close to Tara's heart because of his affinity with the animals. He had a special connection with them, and she'd do anything to learn the skill. But on top of that, his land was burning, his homeland, with his people scattered, and the native creatures within it, his brothers and sisters. His family, my family, he named the Cario Wania, attributing the machine to the cloud and rain spirits as a force for change in this region. Roger Kobar, she said, and wondered at her motley crew. Her, a woman of Iranian descent, living with helmsman Kobar and the Maori man Nikau, who worked in maintenance below, and the navigator Orto, a Chinese woman. They all had their reasons for joining Wania, and Tara definitely had her own. Each one of them set aside by their societies, or lack thereof. And in her case particularly, her family and culture. She looked through the binoculars once more. Her hands always shook with the task. She was used to them shaking, because to her it was all or nothing. Anxiety and stress were normal in this line of work, but she tried her best not to care about that. There were shadows in the distance, almost a silhouette rippling in front of the fires. Great spotting, Kobar. Good on you. The shadows became clearer, and her heart sung at them. Half a dozen or so animals appeared. First, it was wallabies, limping and burnt, but still moving with fervor. She also saw something else among them. Perhaps a bilby? Which was a godsend. As they approached, Tara's heart quailed once more, for she saw at once that some dingoes had run ahead with great speed. Dingoes! Amazing! But every one of those animals looked dark, either from the haze of the atmosphere or from burns. She couldn't tell how serious it was. Helmsman, slow stop. Open the carrier doors, air ducts to full.
Roger that.
The Wania shuddered for several minutes as it slowed down. Tara held on to a support railing until the carrier ceased moving and its mechanism had turned off. She heard the wind beating violently at her window, along with the rickety sound of dust and debris, a regular occurrence in Western Australia now, since the dry season now ran almost all year with virtually no wet season. It had been that way for so long. This place had once been calm and tropical, with a healthy balance of monsoons and dryness, but no longer. Never again. A rush of cool air moved through the entire structure, and a siren started to blare. She unbuckled from her support and moved quickly through Wania, skipping steps, jumping over railings, and reached the bottom of the ship. Tara saw the red sky and dense pockets of cloud outside the carrier doors before she grabbed a face mask, holding bag, goggles, and handling gloves against the wall. She also picked up some penicillin in case an animal might have remnants of leptospirosis. You can never be sure. When she was ready, she faced the blasted landscape. Wearing her long-sleeved shirt and long pants for handling the animals never helped against the heat out there, but it had to be done. And the sight outside always made her wonder at how much Australia had changed. From the first sign of the coming devastation, the rising, insufferable heat, ignored by the government, and their followers being more individualistic and self-serving than ever, without regard for anything else. They even made their stupid sentinel cities empty of animals, including domesticated ones,
closing zoos and outlawing pets so that resources would only go to humans. This is why I hate people. Animals are innocent and have unconditional love. Something these idiots can learn from but haven't. Each year, the climate had become more extreme, and nothing was done about it except by so very few, like us. Every time she opened those doors, it was like she looked at Mars, and the thick fog above were like the clouds of Venus. Is this what the end of the world looks like? The animals must have adapted to this extreme somehow. Otherwise, how the hell can they survive out there? Yes, they're all dwindling, but they're also hanging on fiercely. The animals were fast approaching, and Tara had to act quickly to herd them in. She ran close to the bottom of the ramp and felt the intense heat of the land, saw the ash drifting in the air. She turned a large dial near the doors, and the cold air rushed outwards like a vacuum. The filters cried in protest, and the animals were drawn in, something that still surprised her. It's like they recognized the carriers, because we had so many in the past that were readily available. It's the only place of respite for them. Look at how they enter, so desperate and lost. They came up the ramp, stumbling, falling, struggling to move inside. Orto was there as well, her mask and goggles askew, ready to use her hand-restraining skills if necessary.
"Come on, Tara,"
she said.
"Get out of your head and stop standing there."
Tara ran down the ramp, always keeping an eye out for which animals were injured most, to avoid touching those areas. She approached the dingo, and the animal growled before biting her gloved hands, trying to tear at them. Tara pulled her hands away, stepped back, and stood to her full height. She made sure to keep eye contact, and the dingo backed away and ran around her to the top of the ramp and sat there in the cool, obviously weak, hungry, and burnt all over. That's definitely an alpha female. The dingo watched Tara, the tears of her smoke-burnt eyes drying around them. For some reason, the animal's gaze was unnerving to her, unsettling. "Judging me, like my father does, ready to criticize me if I make a mistake. In the books, it says that trust must be established between animal and man. I have to trust in them as they do in me." To avoid being triggered by the abandonment of her own family, she looked down the ramp. Not 20 meters outside were several dark lumps, all but unmoving. She sprinted past Orto, who held a wallaby by the base of its tail because it was unable to walk.
"Tara!"
Her boots crunched over charcoal and rocky earth, past a few charcoal lumps that were the remains of long dead animals, and reached a bandicoot, miraculously alive. Tara took her time, even though she knew speed was important, and performed the two-handed hold based on her training. She picked up the bandicoot very carefully, with one hand to restrain the head and the other to support the body, legs, and tail, making sure to keep the head away from her face. It looked up at her, It's looking at me. Tara held the animal against her for a moment and took out the holding bag to wrap it in. As she moved away, she saw how many were around her, much more than expected. Dozens of dark lumps, inert, like lumps of coal, unrecognizable, black. She ran back to the carrier, her heart pounding, overwhelmed and confused with grief. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, she said in prayer. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. But the prayer brought back her past and her doubts. How is he being gracious and merciful here? She felt disheartened and angry then. There's never enough of us. There never will be enough of us for this kind of work. First, it was koalas. Then, cockatoos in the east and kookaburras. What next? Bandicoots? It sure looks like it. She struggled to get a good amount of filtered air into her lungs. She didn't care about that. The bandicoot was more important than her. She finally reached the ramp and ran up, panting and coughing. She decided to help Orto regardless of this, in pure Iranian fashion, helping others at the expense of herself. I'm doing it for the animals, not for Orto.
You want to die early while carrying that thing? Don't help me. You need recovery time.
All of a sudden, a large muscular figure was beside her. It was Nikau. With one hand, he gently took the bandicoot from Tara and pulled her to the top of the ramp. He set her down and placed the bandicoot next to her before running back to Orto. Tara wanted to help. She had to, so she staggered to a sitting position, struggled for a moment with her breathing. The poor bandicoot squealed in pain, its small belly rising and falling, watching her like that dingo, calling to me. Tara picked up a cold water container and sprayed the bandicoot until its squealing died down. She looked into its eyes. My family abandoned me because I cared more about you guys than them. And this government abandoned you, caring more about themselves than you. They were scared of losing money, you know. The profits, the economy, and all that junk. Don't they know it's our responsibility to care for you guys? Don't worry. I won't abandon you. Not until my last breath. And there was the female dingo, still sitting and watching her, with the second younger male dingo next to it now, both shaking with obvious tiredness and pain. The wallabies and the bilby huddled nearby as well. The dingoes have been watching me all this time. What are you thinking? Am I going crazy? Are you thinking something? The ramp closed and the siren ceased. The air duct stabilized. Orto called out.
We got two female wallabies and one male. A bilby clinging to a wallaby, two dingoes, and a bandicoot. The total tally is seven animals. Great work, guys.
Wania shuddered to a start and started to move again. Nikau and Orto sprayed them with water, letting them drink from it as well. The dingoes accepted this treatment, and all were cleaned, and a cold compress was applied to their burns. First aid kits were opened and bandages were applied where required. Once all that was done, they proceeded to lightly sedate them to alleviate their pain and their movements. But when Orto and Nikau approached the dingoes, they were met with fierce resistance from the female. Her hackles rose as she barked and growled, bared her canines. Tara watched her. Have you been through this before? Perhaps you can smell the chemicals, even above all this smoke and fire. Then she remembered a time when the dingoes used to watch the carriers go by, a time before the government intervened more completely. They know us in this way, that we are a sanctuary to them.
I can't force it on them. They might sustain more injuries,
Nikau said.
Should I just go in anyway and do a full sedation?
You can't do that, and you know why,
Orto said.
They need to be fasted before it's done. You should know that. Don't cut corners.
Good, Orto, Tara thought. But we are severely understaffed. It's just us. For this whole region, just us. We can't watch over them all the time, even though we really should. But I'll do it. I won't sleep if it comes to that.
Are you okay?
Orto asked Tara.
You know, I didn't mean to be a Jeeba earlier. I always get like that when I'm stressed out.
She smiled weakly, but then the smile turned crooked, and Tara knew there was more to come.
I know you're the captain, and I respect that. But it's like you don't care about us. How long have we been a team together? Years, right? You always act like this. It's like the animals are everything, and we are nothing.
There was a moment of silence between them. Nikau heard the conversation and was looking at Tara, his face full of concern.
I had to get out there, you know,
Tara said, that primarily to deflect the weight of Orto's words, her voice still raspy from the smoke outside. But Tara knew that she needed to prove she was not apathetic like her family, who ignored real problems like so many others.
You're not listening to me. We have to work together, Tara. Our goals are the same.
Orto was flustered, and she looked to Nikau.
She's right,
he said.
You've been a ghost in here. Kobar is the only one you properly talk to.
He is the inheritor of everything,
Tara snapped. In the following stunned silence, Tara quickly said, I'm sorry. Tears welled in her eyes. It's because Before she could say anything else, the alpha female dingo limped between them all and sat below them, looking up at each of them, smelling the air in their clothing. The younger male approached as well, followed by the weary bandicoot. Tara kneeled among them and burst into tears. They are all that matter, she sobbed. More than anything, more than my life.
Why?
Orto asked.
Because we destroyed the planet. We destroyed their wilderness. And we owe it to the animals to save them.
Orto appeared genuinely moved.
But you're forgetting something, Tara, she said. We need to be saved by them as well. Nature has always been in perfect balance before we came. But we've lost our touch with reality, with our perspectives on it all.
Yes. You're absolutely right.
Tara couldn't believe Arto had said that. She is like us. They all are. What was I thinking? Yes, I hate people because of what they've done. But my crew are different, special. Why hadn't I realized that before?
Okay, come on, let's get back into it, Captain.
Orto smiled and helped Tara to her feet. Nikal smiled as well.
We got each other's back, don't we?
Yes, we do, Tara said.
And you know what?
Orto sighed bitterly.
At least you don't have to worry about Australians buying thousands of hectares of farmland from China and taking the profits and produce away, even water produce. Because that's what my people are doing here, helping the Australian government to destroy everything.
That's so true. But you don't have the burden of disassociating from your faith because of a Sunni and Shiite fallout the government wanted to silence. They don't care. Orto, the cities have become sterile with only humans in them to protect us and no animals, none whatsoever. And let's not forget the non-renewable resources they're using up without regard for the damage they're inflicting.
Are you all right?
Orto said.
You spaced out for a second.
I'm all right. I'm just worried about a lot of things.
I don't blame you, sister. You know, I'm grateful for leaving everything that China's doing behind. My family were involved in all that crap for ages.
Orto's smile turned into a grimace as she looked hurt. It was easy to spot with her mask and goggles on.
You know what, Tara? Think of it this way. It's like we are in that story, you know? The one with the big Chuan, where all the animals come inside and that old man takes care of them.
Tara carefully petted the bandicoot, making sure not to hurt the thing. You are all that matters. Little one, I've got no one except you guys. And a crew, of course.
You hearing me, Tara?
Yes, I heard. It's the Kashtin News story. You're right.
Well, I better get back to work. And you better get up there.
Orto said.
We got it covered down here.
I don't want to leave them. I just can't.
Come on.
Orto gave Tara a hug, and Tara reluctantly left the animals, looking back all the time as she made her way to the bridge. Then Kobar ran into her.
Oh, sorry I hit you. Are you okay?
He didn't wait for a response and was gone as soon as he had come. And then Tara remembered something very important. Kobar, who's piloting?
Autopilot,
he called back. Tara smiled. If anyone should take care of them, it should be you. His love and devotion to the animals astounded her. She had only known him for about a year, but he'd really grown on her during that time. He brings his whole heart into what he does. I guess I admire him because I lack the same convictions with my own culture. Finally, she left and reached the bridge and checked all her readings again, sighed, and looked out the viewing window, her hands shaking once again. The drop-off point isn't far, about 7 kilometers, she said into the radio. Kobar, you actually need to go back to your station. We have to go southeast.
Yes, I will,
Kobar said breathless.
But they're not good. They're critical. The burns on them. They're going to go if we don't get to the drop-off point soon.
Tara's stomach filled with butterflies. I know, she said.
Don't worry,
Kobar replied.
Wania will protect them.
Tara looked at the data, and her anxiety rose to a peak, as the prescribed route would take too long. She began to panic. Think, Tara. There's not enough time to go around the fire. But what if we go through it? It would cut their time considerably, but it was a serious gamble. Get the animals into the infirmary, Nikau. I've got a plan, she said.
Roger. Hey, they're going on their own. Amazing.
There are some things animals don't forget, Tara said. Remember, the carrier have been a part of their lives for so long.
Very true,
Nikau replied.
It's so cool. Look at them.
Orto said.
So you have a plan, Tara? Tell us what you're thinking.
We'll, she said, bracing herself. We have to go through the fire. That's the only way they'll survive. We won't have time otherwise. Kobar said they're critical. Have to save them no matter what. They're worth more than us, worth more than anything. She caught herself in that old line of thinking. No, I mustn't think like that anymore. I have to save my crew, both them and the animals together.
Thank you for listening to our episode. Wania was written by Amin Chehelnavi, performed by Nancy Gilliam, sound designed by Gabe Castro, and produced by Dusky Projects. Support Dusky Projects and our coven of spooky black chicks with a rate and review, or by making a tax-deductible donation through the link in the bio. Your contribution helps us continue to feature new authors and new scary stories. Tune in next week for part 2. Till next time.